including Senator Graham, especially Senator Graham, for joining us. Before Senator Graham speaks, I just want to give a brief introduction. A year ago in May, our U.S.-Israel Security Task Force, chaired by retired Admiral Jim Stavridis, released a report on how to bolster the U.S.-Israel security relationship. One of our recommendations was consideration of a mutual defense pact. Over the last year, the task force has considered the idea of how what sort of mutual defense pact would be most effective for the United States and Israel. The idea behind it is that it would add another layer, an added layer of deterrence, particularly for Israel and for U.S. interests in the region. We drafted a paper and a treaty. We have circulated it with folks in the U.S. government and in the Israeli government. We decided now to release it. We are very glad that as part of our kind of quieter efforts over the last year that that Senator Graham has become a real champion of this issue, as, of course, he's known for in the U.S.-Israel relationship in general, and we're honored to have him right now. And I want to turn it over to Senator Graham. Thank you for joining us again, and just like to see if you could comment about, you know, share your remarks about why a mutual defense pact between Israel, which the United States has with about 50 other governments, you know, why it would be beneficial here.
Well, thanks, Mike. And to our friends at Genza, thank you for doing the hard work of putting it together. I talked about the defense pact when I was in Israel. I think there's wide support for the concept. A couple of goals here is we want to make sure the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, never give up their ability to defend Israel. They've never asked for soldiers, and they intend to defend Israel through their capabilities. So nothing in this agreement would restrict the IDF's ability to operate and defend Israel. However, there are certain threats that Israel could face that would be existential to the Jewish state. And in those limited, narrow circumstances, we want all adversaries of Israel to know that in your efforts to destroy them, you have to come through us. Why is it important to the United States? We have, as Mike said, about 50 defense agreements. NATO is probably the most prominent. An Article 5 commitment, an attack against one is an attack against all. Literally under the NATO charter, we would come to the defense of Montenegro if they were attacked. The only time Article 5 has ever been implemented in the history of NATO is when NATO members came to our aid after 9/11. So I'm convinced that this defense arrangement with NATO nations, particularly the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, that the reason Russia doesn't move is because they know that there'll be a broader conflict, that the Russians might be tempted to move against their regional neighbors, but now they're part of NATO, that changes the calculation. So from an intelligence point of view, of all the nations we do business with, I would put Israel at the top or certainly near the top in terms of sharing intelligence that's valuable to the American, defending the American homeland. Israel is a democracy, common values, common enemies. I can't think of anybody wanting to destroy Israel that doesn't want to destroy us. But their intelligence apparatus has been very beneficial to U.S. national security. And I think it's in our national interest to keep this partner safe and secure because it helps keep America safe and secure. The better Israel does, the better America does in terms of national security. They also have developed cutting-edge, leading-edge technologies in the military arena because they're under constant threat, and they always share that technology with us. So from a U.S. point of view, it's important to stand with Israel because they're very much a part of our national security team. What this agreement would do, it would define limited circumstances where we would come to the aid of Israel or vice versa. And we're trying to deter bad actors who would use weapons of mass destruction that would launch major aggressive action against the state of Israel, chemical, biological threats. And really, one of the chief audiences would be Iran. The Iranians have flooded Lebanon with missiles and rockets that are now being precision guided. They support Hamas, and every openly talk about the destruction of the Jewish state. So I think it would be helpful for the United States to have a formal defense pact with Israel, narrow in scope, dealing with existential threats as an act of deterrence. Again, it is in our national security interest that Israel survive and thrive because of the relationship we have in the intelligence arena and common values and common enemies. So my hope is that we can begin to negotiate an agreement that the Trump administration would feel this is in America's national security interest and open up a dialogue with the Israeli government. I believe this concept would have wide support among every faction of the Israeli electorate, that all the major parties and all the major political players would see this as beneficial. Moving the embassy to Jerusalem, I think, was the right move. It was symbolic but important diplomatically. Recognizing the Golan as part of Israel now and forever is absolutely essential because there's no one left to give the Golan back to in Syria, and there should be a price to be paid for dismembering a sovereign nation like Syria by Russia and Iran and others. This would be one of the last big things to do. This security pact, narrowly tailored, I think would send an important deterrence message to Iran and other bad actors when it comes to Israel's security. The United States will be there and vice versa. So this could be one of the most important things I ever do. I'm intent on trying to find bipartisan support for it. I believe there will be. And this can only be done if Israel obviously agrees, and we will be working with the IDF and others to make sure it's written in a fashion to protect Israel's right to self-defense. And it will be tailored and limited. And I cannot imagine an existential threat against Israel where America would not respond. It's something we would probably do anyway. I want to put it up front that, you know, when it comes to existential threats, Israel can count on the United States and vice versa. So GENZA has been indispensable in creating this dialogue and done the hard work of drafting documents, and I'm hoping that the Trump administration will find this beneficial to U.S. national security, and I believe there'd be a lot of bipartisan support for the concept, narrowly tailored and specifically worded.
Thank you very much, Senator, for those remarks, and we appreciate your kind words, and it's terrific to work with you. And, Leo, do you, before I and Jonathan, after the Senator gets off the call, Jonathan and I, Rui and I, will discuss the report, the paper, a little more, but do you want to turn us some questions from the press?
Senator, is it all right if we take a one or possibly
sure.
questions
yeah,
from our
about,
audience?
About 10, great. About 10 minutes, okay.
Excellent. Thanks. If anybody has any questions, we're going to give priority to members of the media that are joining us. Please hit 5-star on your phone, and I will go ahead and unmute you. Again, that's 5-star. Caller, if you could announce yourself, and please go ahead.
Hi, this is Kim Dozier with CNN and a contributor to Time. Senators, there has been a difficult relationship with Israeli intelligence in the past where they've played sort of a cat-and-mouse game with each other on the ground in Israel, station chiefs from the U.S. getting harassed, et cetera. So while there's some close sharing, I know that there's been a reluctance in the past by previous DNI to bring them into a Five Eyes-type relationship. I mean, how far would this go?
Well, this agreement would be narrowly tailored to existential threats. What I'm trying to do is make sure that the world knows that if you're trying to destroy Israel through a weapon of mass destruction or a major attack by regional or global powers, you try to blow up their airport and destroy their communication system, that you'll be subject to retaliation not just by Israel but by the United States. And I'm convinced that the intelligence sharing is robust and is meaningful and makes a difference. And I've had firsthand knowledge of how the technology has been transferred from IDF to the United States military regarding Stryker vehicle protections, and there's just a lot of things that Israel develops and invents because of necessity that we benefit from. So to me, when you look at the defense pacts we have with other nations, Israel's on the top end of the value for the United States.
Great. Caller, please go ahead.
Okay.
My apologies, caller. Hi, please go ahead.
This is Eli Lake from Bloomberg. Can you say, Senator Graham, whether you've discussed this with President Trump or anyone else in the White House and the kind of reaction you've gotten?
I have briefly mentioned it to President Trump. Before I go down that road, I wanted to make sure our friends in Israel understood what we were talking about. And, you know, the IDF is an important player here. You know, we're not going to have a situation where they lose the ability to defend themselves against attacks coming from, you know, the West Bank or Gaza. And this is not about a rocket being shot and intercepted by the Iron Dome. It really will be about existential threats that, you know, threaten the very existence of Israel. The first thing I want to make sure of is that the Israeli political system from all ends of the spectrum feel like this is beneficial. If they feel that way, then I think then we need to sit down and get our folks in a room and start talking. I'm hopeful the president will see value. Again, we have about 50 defense pacts with other nations. Most people probably thought we already had an arrangement with Israel anyway, but we actually don't.
Great, thank you. And we've got time for one more question. Caller, please go ahead.
It's Michael Gordon from the Wall Street Journal. I wanted to follow up on Eli's question. Apart from the brief conversation, Senator Graham, that you had with President Trump, what about DOD? What about other quarters of the administration? Who in the administration is interested in pursuing this?
Well, I think, you know, Admiral Stavridis' report, you know, the whole how can we better secure the relationship, I think the people who are actually writing that report probably are the same mindset of people that are in, you know, on the front lines of defending America. So from my point of view, if you do believe the Israeli intelligence sharing relationship and their defense technology benefiting our defense systems, which I believe both, I think you'll find a lot of buy-in from those on the front lines of defending the United States. But, Michael, and what I'm trying to stress is there's no use talking about this unless there's a receptive support in Israel, and it's got to be, you know, something that I think the entire political spectrum, major political players anyway, would buy into, and we'll see where that goes.
But you must have had conversations in Israel about this. Is there any reason to think there isn't that support there?
Well, don't know yet. The IDF seemed to be very interested. Again, you know, I'm a big supporter of Article 5 commitments in NATO. I really think it protects the Baltic states, Montenegro, and these smaller nations from being gobbled up by Russia. At the same time, I want to send a clear signal to Iran and others who are flooding Lebanon and, you know, the Gaza Strip with rockets that are now becoming precision-guided. If there's ever a massive attack against Israel, we're gonna hold accountable the people who made the rockets and sold them. So I would, before I can commit to where the administration's at, I'll have to tell you about where the Israelis are. It is my belief that there would be support for this in the administration, that this is a logical extension of relationship, of a strong relationship, and the fact that we don't have a defense pact with Israel is probably news to most people.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Senator Graham. Mike, if you perhaps have one final question for the senator before he has to tend to the business of the nation.
Well, this is part of the...
Probably voting on a judge from North Dakota is important, but we can take one more question. Yeah.
No, I think I just wanted to emphasize, I think if maybe the Senator of Justice, and I think it's important what the Senator said, papers for a narrow mutual defense pact. I just want to echo what the Senator said, that we have a mutual defense pact with about 50 other countries, but what we're calling for here is only for mutual defense pact to be activated under exceptional circumstances. So it's a more narrow mutual defense pact than we have with other countries. I just want to make that clear, and I kind of emphasize what the Senator said, which we completely agree with.
Let me just build on that. We're not taking away from Israel the ability to act, defend themselves from day in and day out threats. Israel's a very capable force. They can handle themselves well, but they could become a massive attack, a regional coalition, a weapon of mass destruction being delivered, chemical biological attacks. We want to create a sense of deterrence that if you go down that road, if that's your plan, then you're going to meet stiff resistance, not just from Israel, but the United States. And I would just say this. To me, the relationship is important enough from an intelligence point of view, from a military point of view, from a shared values point of view, the only democracy in the region, for us to go down this road. Again, we have commitments far beyond what I'm saying that this pact would entail with other nations that, in my view, do not bring the same amount of value to the table. And I want an unequivocal statement to be made that if you're out to destroy the one and only Jewish state through extraordinary means, then you're going to pay a price that's not worth it. And that's the whole point of this pact, is to deter some building storm clouds and to create as much deterrence as we can and do it in the most narrow way possible. And I think the relationship is important enough to the United States for us to make that statement. With that, I got to run.
Thank you very much, Senator. We really appreciate it. And thank you very much for leading on this issue, as you do on a lot of national security issues.
All right. Excellent. And for all of our friends calling in, I'm now going to turn it back to Agency President CEO Dr. Michael Makovsky and our Senior Policy Director Jonathan Rui from our Gmunder Center to talk about what the Mutual Defense Pact actually entails and what our next steps moving forward are. So with that, back to you, Mike.
Thank you. I'll just say that, first of all, I'm very grateful for Senator Graham's time today on this call and his leadership on this issue. I'd say that historically, this is not a new idea, but it's a new idea recently, if that's an accurate thing to say. Historically, a lot of Israelis left-right have been opposed to a mutual defense pact because, as the Senator said, basically they always say they want to defend themselves by themselves. They don't want U.S. blood being spilled on their soil. They don't want any constriction of freedom of movement, freedom of action militarily, and they don't really want anything to be, let's say, tied to the peace process. Like, we'll give you a mutual defense pact, but we want you to make these concessions, let's say, in the peace process. So those, I'd say, have been historically, I wouldn't say it's a left or right issue in Israel, but I'd say that there often would have been a consensus on this, so there hadn't. But I think with the growing Iranian threat and with other threats growing in the area, I think there's an understanding that there are issues, there are threats that could challenge Israel's viability as a state, or its economic viability might be a little too big for Israel to handle, and that mutual defense pact actually could, as the Senator said, add a layer of deterrence and actually contribute to stability in the region. On the American side, I would say, certainly in recent years, there's always been apprehension. There is an apprehension for extending our commitments. Certainly, it seems that's a concern of this president and the previous president. But what we're calling for, therefore, in our paper, which I encourage everyone to look at, it's brief. We kept that purposely because we know folks, particularly in Washington, don't want to read too much. It's about 5 or 6 pages. We try to explain why we address those concerns on both sides, and we propose this more narrowly define mutual defense pact, which would activate, and I'm going to read from the report, if I may, the introductory area section, under really just a few exceptional circumstances, such as the threat of weapons of mass destruction, a major armed attack by powerful regional and global power, coalition of powers, or assault threatening vital lines of air and sea communications, and then an attack undermining Israel's qualitative edge, and some urgent requests from either government. So that's how we've defined those exceptional circumstances. We've also drafted a treaty because this would have to be a treaty, we think, and therefore it'd have to have 67 votes in the Senate to pass. And we did that because we thought that would contribute to the process to help explain what the treaty could look like and what we think it probably should not look like. So I'll stop there and turn to Jonathan. Jonathan, do you have anything you want to add to what I had to say?
Yeah, thank you, Mike. And I'd just like to echo your gratitude to Senator Graham for his time and leadership on this. I think just a few quick points that are sort of, if you read between the lines in the report that Senator Graham sort of alluded to, but I think bear expanding upon. Both Mike and Senator Graham talked about how this would add a layer of deterrence. And so I think it's very important to think of a mutual defense pact. Their success since we first started agreeing to these things in 1947, their success has been demonstrated by the fact that there's only one time any of them have ever been called into use. And as Senator Graham mentioned, that was on 9/11. Really is the effect of these things is to say, you know, if you want to attack Israel, you have to go through the United States, and therefore a lot of the success of these things has been precisely because our adversaries have made the calculation that it's simply not worth it. And what we've made clear in the report, and something that comes out very evidently in looking through the history, is that Iran is eminently deterrable by the threat of superior military force. What we're seeing happen today is a different story than what we're talking about for a mutual defense pact. And as Senator Graham mentioned, this isn't to address every or any of the mortars or rockets that come out of Gaza. This is to address what we think is really a qualitatively different threat environment that's brewing in the Middle East, and one which would require, in the very limited circumstances we talk about, the credible threat of U.S. retaliatory force to deter Iran from acting in the first place. So I think the ultimate upshot of this, why we're pursuing this agreement, is not to overextend the U.S. strategically any more than it is, which we realize is a concern among the American public and policymakers, but rather this is to deter a conflict in the first place and therefore reduce the chances the United States will get involved in another war in the Middle East in the first place. So, Mike, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. Leo, why don't you explain again how people could ask for questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, anybody that did not have the opportunity to ask Senator Graham a question, I've reopened and restarted the queue. So please, if you have any questions for Dr. Makovsky or Jonathan Rui, please press 5-star. And while we're waiting for some people to raise their hands, Mike, you mentioned earlier that this mutual defense pact is part of a broader initiative that JINS has been working on for more than a year now, which is just one of many recommendations that the organization has for strengthening the U.S.-Israel security relationship. Do you want to touch on some of the other key recommendations that we're working on that are complementary to the mutual defense pact?
Yeah, thanks, Leo. I'll just say briefly because I want people who want to ask the question. But they could, first of all, they could look at this paper, which is derivative from that other report from last year. It's all on our website, jinsa.org, J-I-N-S-A.org. But other things that we have pursued very concretely, I would say the task force is, you know, comprised of 4 or 5 retired generals and admirals. So it's very concrete issues that they've proposed, things having to do with front-loading the 10-year MOU, the understanding, the memorandum of understanding that was agreed under President Obama for a 10-year military aid package to Israel. It's in total about $3.8 billion a year, but working out ways that Israel could get some of their weapon systems earlier to meet the growing Iranian threat and other regional threats, replenishing the pre-positioned weapons the weapons that the United States has pre-positioned in Israel, joint R&D between Israel and the United States. And I think we just saw some fruits of that with the Arrow 3 launch the other day in Alaska, or testing, I should say, our latest test. Anyway, there are other recommendations, but I want to see, Leo. So we've been working on these issues, and this is an important priority. We think it's important, very concrete ways to bolster the U.S.-Israel security relationship, especially at a time when Iran is still the threat is growing, I think certainly on the nuclear side again, and it continues on the regional side, and really Israel is on the front lines of that. And I think it's important for the U.S. interest to give Israel the tools, because as they push back against Iranians, and they're really the only country effectively rolling back the Iranians in the region, I think it's, which serves our interests, I think it's important to give them all the tools they need and the protection with like a mutual defense pact. All right, Leo?
Great. Yeah, we've got a number of questions. And again, for anyone else, five star. I'll go ahead and caller, please, if you could announce yourself and go ahead.
Yeah, hi, it's John Hanna at FDD. Mike, first, congratulations on this. It's very, very interesting. And first of all, the report from last year that Admiral Stavridis did, I think, was a really important and thoughtful contribution on the way to think forward for the U.S.-Israel strategic cooperation. So thanks to you guys, and kudos to you guys for really getting this discussion off the ground. It's excellent work and lots of food for thought. I'm just wondering on this, and I think the treaty is very interesting too, because as you said, there's for decades now that this has probably been discussed and just various concerns on both sides, and I think you guys have made a real serious effort to try and address almost all the concerns that either side has raised about the ways that they might be constrained or concerned about an actual treaty relationship. But I wanted to ask you about specific kinds of contingencies. So I'm assuming that if this treaty had existed in 1967 or 1973, it probably would have triggered a U.S. military intervention into those conflicts. I know these are what ifs historically, but I just wonder, is it your hunch that you'd agree with that? And then the future contingency, I'm wondering about whether it crosses the threshold. Even though I know this is directed primarily at an Iran-Israel contingency, what about a Hezbollah-Israel contingency? Because you're talking about 150,000 rockets. You're talking about probably a lot of precision material capable of hitting Ben-Gurion Airport, capable of hitting other critical infrastructure. And so it probably walks right up to the line. Everybody knows that war is probably coming in a matter of when, not if. And what do you think about that scenario and process?
Yeah, it's a good question. Thanks, John, and I appreciate the kind words about the report. And we have grappled with this, and I'll just add, I learn a great deal every time you ask or say anything or write anything. So I appreciate your kind words. I think so. It depends on every conflict, of course. About the Hezbollah conflict, as you correctly pointed out, I think one of the issues, and we kind of hint to it, we don't get into details too much, because, by the way, mutual defense pacts generally don't get into too much detail, including about what the U.S. response would be. But let's just take a scenario that you brought up about Hezbollah firing a lot of rockets. What if it meant, for instance, a really shutting down of Israeli sea lanes for an extended period of time? They wouldn't even have to hit a lot of commercial ships, but they could hit some, and it would raise the – Lloyd's could raise the insurance rates and make it really commercially very prohibitive for a lot of ships to come in to Israel to bring supplies. If it affected shipping for an extended period of time, that would really threaten Israel's economic vitality. So I think in a situation like that, I think it very well could. Of course, it would depend on exactly how that conflict played out. I don't think it would, just the initiation of such a conflict would trigger a mutual defense pact, but it would depend on, you know, how such a conflict played out and what was threatened, what was hit on the Israeli side. And I would add also, the paper does not list exactly what the U.S. would do in response. There's a ladder of escalatory action that the U.S. could take, you know, rising all the way to the level, of course, with kinetic action, but there are a lot of useful things that the United States could do that could fulfill the pact without using U.S. troops. Could be, like you mentioned, 73. It could be immediate, resupply of weapons, for instance, like the Israelis eventually had, but it took a little bit of time in the Yom Kippur War. So I should just say that on the U.S. side, the obligations would not be spelled out. That's how we wrote the treaty. It's done on purpose. And it would depend on exactly how a conflict would play out. But as you raised, but we say specifically, we do talk about sea and air lanes being threatened because Israel is somewhat of an island economically still and is very dependent on commercial shipping, just to use one example. So I hope that addresses it somewhat, John. And again, thank you very much for your kind words.
Great. We've got time for one, maybe two more questions. Yeah, and again, anybody, 5-star. In the meantime, caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Judy Hirshan. I wonder if anybody would comment on Turkey's statement that anyone, this is a NATO ally stating anyone supporting Israel is an enemy, as well as the comments of the congresswomen attacking dual loyalty attacks. But it's been a very muted response as far as the Israel-U.S. defense relationship. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah. Well, Judy, is Mike. Thanks for joining the call. I think that's just something we'll have to talk online. The focus on this discussion is really on this mutual defense pact. I'm glad you brought up Turkey, and I didn't know that. I noted what you were referring to about that. But we did have actually Turkey in mind, possibly. I mean, we do talk about in this mutual defense pact, a coalition of powers that could come against Israel. It seems today less realistic, and obviously Iran is in the back of all our minds about all of this, and the senator mentioned it. But one could conceive a scenario years down the road if Turkey is continuing the path that it's taken and maybe other countries alter theirs, that Israel could again face a coalition of powers that oppose it, in militarily, like it had in the such of the examples that John Hannah mentioned earlier. So we're not there. I'm not trying to suggest we're there yet with Turkey, but obviously the Turkish foreign policy for a number of years now has been extremely worrisome, and I share your concerns about them. And we have a project we've initiated recently on the Eastern Mediterranean. We're going to be putting out more things about Turkey. Because I think that's really, I think the Turkish challenge is really important. Leo?
Yeah, great. We've got time for one more question. Caller, please go ahead.
My name is Larry Gould. I've been a member of the Executive Committee of Middle East Forum. In 1981, Israel struck the Iraqi reactor without the U.S. knowledge, did the same thing in Syria. And last year, it got a truckload of secrets from Tehran. Suppose Israeli intelligence finds out that it's necessary to attack Iran's reactor. Under those circumstances, how would this treaty affect U.S. decisions whether or not to join in the attack on Iran, taking into account political factors?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll just say, and I don't know if Jonathan has anything to add on this, but it is a defensive treaty, but in this, I would imagine it's hard to conceive every scenario, of course. But I will add this about what you said. I think any Israeli action like that would obviously be seen more as a defensive, you know, in the defensive context. But one thing about the defense treaty is, I think the purpose behind it is not only to deter. We use that word in the paper, but there's another word we use, which I think I forgot to mention earlier in this call, which is also to mitigate. And I think a mutual defense pact has a value of not only deterring action, but might also mitigate possible, depending on the scenario, a retaliatory strike by an adversary of Israel. So I think just having the mutual defense pact might, you know, if in the scenario you gave, might mitigate in Iranian the severity of an Iranian response. But what the whether the U.S. would join in such a thing, I think, is a separate issue that is really not connected to this mutual defense pact. Jonathan, do you have anything?
Yeah,
you
I would.
Add on that?
Sure, I'll just piggyback on Mike's response, and I am fully concur that an Israeli strike by itself on Iran's nuclear program, or some other similar contingency by itself would not activate this pact, but rather the prospect of, as we call it, major Iranian retaliation in the report. And I think it's instructive here just quickly to think about all the times throughout our history with our NATO partners, but also our other treaty allies, all the times that they took unilateral military action on their own, whether offensive or defensive, and ipso facto, the United States was not required by its treaty obligations to support those actions, whether it be the French in Vietnam, the British in Southeast Asia, or the Falklands, or the French in Algeria, are just some of the biggest, most glaring examples. So I think in terms of just Israeli preventive action or preemptive action against Iran's nuclear program, that's not really the set of circumstances we're talking about here, but rather the prospect of a massive Iranian retaliation for that is what we view the treaty would either deter or mitigate or help address. And as we note in the paper, in terms of addressing strategic concerns for both the United States and Israel that might arise from entering into this treaty, we're very careful to note that, you know, in a lot of ways, the United States and Israel already have the de facto responsibilities of being treaty allies, whether it's notifying each other in advance of such preventive action that might create problems for the other country in the region, but also the very real prospect that if the United States or Israel has to take preventive action against Iran's nuclear program, the reality is that, you know, Iran might very well not be too picky in who it retaliates against in the region, including both American and or Israeli assets.
Yeah, I think well put, Jonathan. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Would you do you have any final words before we close out?
No, I just want to thank everyone and just say, add in that this and other elements that we talked about before about how I think it's important for U.S. interests to bolster the security ties with between Israel and the United States, the mutual defense pact, and some of the other things we talk about. This is a big effort for JINSA, and you know, certainly those, you know, we certainly look forward to your support as we pursue this over, you know, at least through this administration and this Congress to start. So we thank you very much in advance for your support and your help, and we appreciate your being on the call. And I would just say stay tuned. Other things that we will be putting out starting, you know, in the fall on other elements of the U.S.-Israel security relationship. And thanks, Leo, for moderating.
Yeah, my pleasure, and thanks, everyone, for your time. And we look forward to having you at a JINSA Venner conference call again soon. Thanks.